Hey, dear listeners, welcome back to the Greenhouse. Joining me today is our favorite co-host, Josh. Figured, you know, I'd take a bit of a break after the barrage episodes we released in January. And with each day I took to write this outline, there was like a new thing I needed to add. This has been, I'd say, what, a busy 2 weeks in the news cycle?
Yeah, and like some of the stuff that, you know, we have in the outline has like sort of left the news cycle already and whatnot. Just kind of the nature of the beast. But yeah, I mean, and like it's, this is going to be kind of all over the place in terms of substance, I think, right? There's going to be some stuff here that is, I mean, this is like the pinnacle of kind of what the news cycle is all about, right? It's about like what gets clicks. There's a lot of theater in here. If you're theater kids, this is your episode. Just maybe not, you know, the same level of performance that you're used to, but yeah, this is a lot of performative stuff, some futile wishing that certain things will improve that won't improve, and yeah, we've got it all here.
Yeah, let's probably start with some of the heaviest stuff first, and we'll try to get lighter as we progress. So we can't really start our first episode of Black History Month without addressing some of the really hideous stuff that's going on with the state of police brutality right now. So the big story that's been kind of brewing slowly since last year, if people have been following Cop City, and it's kind of taken an insane pitch lately now, is the wave of protest against it, and how, in spite of how unpopular the project is, and with the fact that a protester was actually killed by the police in the process of all this, the city of Atlanta is still going to continue with the project for what is basically a military-style training facility for Atlanta PD.
Yeah, and like this is, I mean, if there's one thing, like, not to like shame anyone who's, you know, supportive of, you know, the defund movement or Black Lives Matter and whatnot, but this is kind of like one of those things where I think that, like, unfortunately, and maybe this is more so the fault of the media, that like this stuff sort of goes under the radar, right? Where like these these protests over, really, you know, like this is a very clear like effort to, you know, stop, like, this is one of the key things about, you know, the militarization of the police and whatnot, and there's a clear protest to sort of work against it, but like this gets like really no playtime compared to the ones that happen, you know, after, you know, police actually victimize someone, right? And that's kind of problematic, right? I mean, for like all perspectives, right? That we want, you know, some preventative measures, like let's not, you know, continue this proliferation of the militarization of the police. Let's protest this, right? And there's such kind of minimal pushback, right? I think there was some level of negotiation with the protesters, but, you know, they instead like kind of dismissed them as I think they were actually in one case charged with domestic terrorism for just occupying the land that it's on, right? It's not like they're being particularly disruptive to anything else other than the commencement of this project, but here we are. That's the one that went more under the radar, right? There's obviously the I'm probably gonna butcher the pronunciation, Tyre Nichols.
Yeah, in the same thread that happened in Memphis, where in a traffic stop gone wrong, five police officers are brutally beating somebody to death.
Yeah, and like that's the thing too, where it's like, you know, there's, and it's like that's a little different than what we've seen with some of these other ones, right? Not to like necessarily like say that like, they're all like different levels of like badness or whatever, but right, but you know, for the most part, the big incidents, right, that we've had, like George Floyd, it wasn't like a traffic stop, right? There was like some, you know, probably overblown reaction to some level of wrongdoing and whatnot, right? Not saying that, like, you know, like you can't be a danger to the road or whatever, but that's not clearly the case here, right? This is a traffic stop, and they went insane, right? And there's the cam footage available for anyone who's, you know, you know, definitely don't look at it if you're lighthearted or, you know, the faint of heart. Do not look at it. But it's brutal. And it shows, too, like, on some level, the weakness of, like, the trainings done in, like, something like Cop City or whatnot, too, where you have police who are sort of trained to sort of just kind of say certain lines, you know, like, just to make it kind of deny themselves like any, you know, wrongdoing, right? It's like, oh, well, we were telling him to do this and he wasn't complying or whatever, or like if the cam wasn't here, you wouldn't see that he wasn't complying. And in that case, right, I mean, he's not complying because he's like beaten half to death already. He can't, you know, lift his hands up because he's a walking corpse.
Yeah, it's both stories really highlight like the insane state of affairs we've reached on the militarization of the police, how law enforcement actually operates in this country. And I mean, let's maybe just try to focus on the Tyre Nichols case first, right? Which is like,
sure.
In this particular case, what's heinous is there was a quote, the officers involved were part of what's called the Scorpion Unit. It's a backronym for something just really like Blue Lives Matters-y. I don't want to repeat it, but basically these
what's up with like these government organizations, right? Where I know like some people are like, this is like kind of unrelated, but I've seen people say like, you know, like, well, bad guys don't see themselves as the bad guys, right? But we've got the Scorpion Unit.
Right.
I mean, our healthcare federal system is called Cobra. Like,
right.
What is going on with this stuff? Like, when do we wake up and just like, you know, are we the baddies, right? Like, it's just a never ending thing. But anyways, carry on.
No, I mean, you've got a point there, right? Where it's just like, you don't want people to go down the conspiracy theory rabbit hole, but you just set everything up to look as suspicious as possible. And so with the Scorpion Unit, basically it's like an intercollection of like the worst aspects of militarized police, from unmarked cars to like combat training. And I think the objective of this unit is like to take down gang violence and drugs. But then why is this elite unit doing a traffic stop? You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
And like to me, like the whole thread is like, and I don't understand everything that happened, but it just looks like you're trying to exert dominance. That's what it looks like. And it's, we talk a lot about authoritarianism around the world, but I mean, you see like gross displays like this more and more now, right?
Yeah, and I think that, you know, it's on some level, right, you know, maybe this is, it's just, they've kind of realized there's like a media market where this just plays better now. So like we just see it more, whereas a lot of this stuff was maybe like less report or like
under. That's also true.
And whatnot too. And yeah, but I mean, you're right. Like it's just kind of, you know, I don't really know how else to describe it, right? I mean, you're right. It's just something that we're seeing more and more. It's increasingly visible. And I think like the other thing that's like insane to me, and it's kind of a overarching theme of like all of these events, if there's a through line, it's this, that like the level of like the conservative ideology to just like, under no circumstance can the cops possibly be wrong, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
It's just like, because it's like, I mean, I know like, you know, we, and like, you know, our ideological circles, right, we say like ACAB, you know, all cops are bastards. In our heart of hearts, do we really believe that everyone who puts on the uniform is like an irredeemable piece of shit? Probably not, right? It's just kind of a generalization that like, yeah, like maybe you shouldn't generalize that much, but it's helpful in communicating the message, right, that like if you aren't all like working to, you know, better your, you know, the entity of the police institutions, then you're not really, you know, helping anyone. Like, I think people do probably genuinely, you know, intend to do that. But, you know, in their case, right, it's like, it does not matter what the police do, right? If they just, like, shot a kid in the streets because whatever, right? Well, the kid must have done something wrong. He shouldn't have been there. All of that. And it's just insane to me that it's, like, under, like, that you're so subsumed by, like, this dumb ideology, which I already have problems with anyways, but, like, the fact that you won't consider that there could be any exceptions, right? Or in this case, or like the Tyre Nichols case, because you have black police officers, right? That adds a whole new dynamic, right? It's not because they're cops, it does. It's because they're blacks.
And it's like you can almost like dismiss, I don't know, like this brutality on them being uniquely black officers. But there's a missed point in all of this that it was only brought up in like a couple spaces online, and again, how much merit do online discussions have, right? But the point kind of being expressed here, right, is that you can have a more representative police force. In Memphis's case, you do have a black woman as chief of police, and this still managed to go down, you know?
Yeah.
And you have to understand this as a broader context of, like, in police departments across America, right? Like, internal affairs bureaus are less concerned about ethical conduct, more so than they are, like, running a protection racket. You have to consider for a fact that training programs have incentivized violent behavior over restraining violence. You have to emphasize that, like, there's a corrosive nature to how modern policing is done mm-hmm. by design. And you, if you're not operating from that central awareness, right? Because, like, ACAB is like a distillation of everyone's frustration, and I don't think it's, like, unfair to say it. But you have to, like, you know, look at this in the broader context of, like, as long as the police exist in this American context of defending particularly upper-class property, mm-hmm. we're going to continue to run into this. Defund or not, abolish the police or not. If police means defending rich people's property, it's going to continue to blow up like this. And yeah. combine that with, you know, how much federal funding goes towards militarizing the police. Combine that with, like, the reactionary forces that either organically or inorganically are, you know, making it into how police forces operate. You can't divorce that reality from your analysis of it.
Yeah, and I mean, I was gonna say, like, I think that's just, like, really the synthesis of all this, right? That, you know, it's another demonstration that, you know, diversity and equity, I mean, and you could probably extend this beyond the police, right? It's not the end all be all solution to, like, you know, how do you make things more equitable for people, right? It's like, well, just diversifying, you know, the pool of suppressors doesn't necessarily make them less likely to want to suppress their own people, unfortunately.
Exactly. It's like, again, we have this approach to policy from police to a bunch of other things where it's like, getting more diverse faces in is going to change the structure of the department. But if you don't change the structural incentives, we're going to continue to pop into similar situations like this. And maybe to tie this back to Atlanta with Cop City, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the, and keep in mind, Atlanta's a, you know, it has a black democratic political machine operating within it. The points made by the mayor about the protesters were like, it's basically the same media playbook as Trump or any other, like, Republican commenting on it. It's like, oh, all the people who came to protest were outsiders. They didn't live here. And everything else about how, like, you know, opposing the police is a fraught position, and kind of like trying to find a softer, more polished way to say, like, what right-wingers would say in the similar instance, but it's, you know, it's the diverse faces saying it.
Yeah, and I think that that's, and that's just an evergreen problem, right? You know, from policing to Medicare to, like, almost every policy position, right? It's just sort of like, you know, is there a difference in tone and delivery? Yes. Is there a difference in policy? Not so much when it comes to this stuff, unfortunately. And political machines, I mean, those are kind of just a mess all around, right? Where we've,
right.
you know, we've touched a little bit on, you know, them every so often as they relate to different stories. But, you know, they're kind of a mess. They're not necessarily representative. I mean, they're even less representative of you know, democratic as in, like, the party values than the party itself, which is already, you know, struggling in a lot of ways to live up to those promises.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So needless to say, right, like, it's especially frustrating to see all this, like, go down in February. It's especially frustrating to see that the solution being proposed is the George Floyd Accountability and Policing Act, named for an event that's, like, what, 2 years old now at this point, and very little has been done to kind of move forward from that point.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing too, that's like, we're like, this story, you know, all of the ones that we're going to talk about today are frustrating for various reasons, but this one's probably just the most, or like both of these are the most frustrating just because like of the futility involved with it, right? You know, like George Floyd was 2 years ago, and you have this act, like, you know, named after him, to like policing reform and all this stuff, and like, there, we're not even like seeing like incremental progress, really.
No, not at all. And I think, you know, not to pin this on Brandon particularly, but that line when he
takes, come on, man,
not just come on, man, but like, when did he say nothing will fundamentally change? Was that during the campaign, or was that
I can't remember if it was during his primary campaign or if it was before he had formally announced as a candidate. I don't quite remember, but it was early 2019.
Yeah, I think that's really like the most telling message from the ruling class, right? Is that we're still talking about these issues from the paradigm, well, at least in polite society, we're talking from this paradigm that the police as they currently are constituted can still exist, and we can somehow still reform these increasingly horrifying cases of brutality. You know what I mean?
Well, and I would go as far to say too that even like reform, I'm not even sure we're really seeing that in any meaningful level.
Of course,
either.
Of course we're not. Exactly.
Because yeah. Like, you know, it's not even like, you know, as I said, you know, it's worse than incremental at this point. Like it's virtually non-existent. But also, like, I mean, at the State of the Union last year, and I'm pretty sure, you know, when he was sworn into office, and we'll probably hear it again, this one too, right? The solution to this isn't defund the police, it's to fund the police. And it's like, fundamentally, people don't, like, it's like, yeah, like, I think the layman doesn't necessarily understand these issues on a particularly deep level, right? And, you know, like, to them, like, yeah, like, you know, would I want to, like, get rid of my police force, right? And, like, does, like, naturally think, like, that's going to create a crime wave or whatever. But people aren't thinking about, like, you know, there's only a base level of funding that you really need for the police to do, like, the job that you want them to do. This is, you know, the funding of the police in this country goes well and beyond any like meaningful mission of, you know, protecting, you know, the public safety and whatnot, you know, the level of militarization and all that stuff. And, you know, they lack any that's the thing too, right? Where it's like, you know, there's discussions about how, like, you know, there's been, and this is kind of interesting with just some of the discussion about, you know, defunding the wokeness of the military, which is a bit of an oxymoron. But in some ways, right, the military is more woke than the police force. And it's not because, like, oh, well, there's, like, more diversity or whatever. It's because they have, you know, ethics trainings and stuff like that that police don't go through, but do similar jobs that the military does in other countries, right, where it's like, you know, let's commit domestic war crimes, basically, in a lot of cases.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm trying to recall the case here. If I can find it, I'll at least send it to you, and I'll maybe link it in the show notes. But I'm even recalling, like, there's cases of police who wanted to be whistleblowers in their departments, or who wanted to, like, review bad conduct for internal affairs, or, like, yeah, you know, wanted to speak up on these issues in their departments, the usual answer was to fire them. You know what I'm saying? So, like,
yeah,
there is a reactionary turn in American policing. We talk a lot about community policing as the way we want things to move forward, but, you know, who's going to do that? You know what I'm saying? Especially when, like, and we talked about this in earlier episodes, right? We're like, the ginning up of crime as an electoral issue, while, like, the Washington consensus, I'm not saying that pejoratively, I'm saying that in, like, a real sense, right, is that, you know, you're not going to change this relationship police have to the communities they operate in and their relationship to protecting property. So what else is going to happen other than this intensification? Like, it seems facile to this idea that people are somehow still shocked that this is happening. I'm not saying that, like the disappointment is warranted, the sadness is warranted, the pain is, of course, very real. But if you're still shocked by this, oh, you got to get with the program.
Yeah, and like, you know, again, look a little deeper even than just, you know, some of the basic stuff that they kind of cover on, you know, the normal mainstream media, right? And I think to some extent, like the use of crime as this evergreen electoral issue, right, I think kind of, you know, follows suit from, you know, kind of the way the media does it, right? You know, like, if it bleeds, it leads. And that sort of mentality over the years has just led to, like, this constant preoccupation with crime. And, you know, it's a huge, daunting problem. you know, it's like you're facing down so many institutions that, and I'm not necessarily saying that, like, you know, the media necessarily has an intrinsic, I mean, some parts of it certainly do, of like keeping it the status quo. But, you know, it's just, you have all these things that are just very difficult to, you know, wrestle around to really pursue any meaningful reform on this front. And until that happens, there's not going to be any, you know, changes.
Yep. And I don't know. All I can say is, you know, solidarity with everyone who's, you know, resisting some of this. It's really also a small point I did want to bring up with the Atlanta case especially, is that the amount of forest that is going to be taken down to build this facility is vital in stopping flooding during winter months. And, you know, for people decrying this as like an act of environmental racism, that kind of is the correct word for it, you know. It just seems like, you know, the most like asinine and cruel set of priorities for any like municipality to have. But like we've been saying, you know, this is unfortunately another step in a long series of bad decisions from the war on drugs onwards, and possibly even before.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the perfect summation of everything.
Well, I'm gonna go grab some water real quick.
All right,
let's take a 2-minute break and then we can continue.
Cool.
All right.
Nonviolent protesters sitting in trees just yesterday. Now, at the same time that Buckhead is moving to shut down private enterprises because they're making too much noise, the police that will be enforcing these things are moving into a militarized training facility that they're attempting to build in a black community on grounds that are already being used for bomb testing and shooting. So it is quite clear that the city has moved with its feet, showing who is entitled to peace and quiet in the city and who is not. This is what we are dealing with. When the next Rayshard Brooks is killed, do not let these politicians get on television and tell you how sorry they are, because they're setting the grounds for it right now. That is what we're dealing with in our city. And we must accept more. Black faces in high places are not enough. Mayor Dickens, you have been lukewarm. When it was politically expedient, you voted to re-shift the money in the policing budget. When it was the hot commodity in summer of 2020, all of a sudden, you are mute. We are asking for more right now. There could not be a clearer demonstration of environmental racism. The same city who could not have the will to fix the sewage system, where every time it rains more than a quarter of an inch in DeKalb County, you have a flood of sewage that goes into the South River. Now they're planning on flattening the forest that soaks up the water. What do you think is going to happen to our water supply? Do not let them convince you that they care about our lives when every single thing that they're doing shows us the exact opposite. Now, as you can see, the police have mobilized like never before to stop our protest in this press conference. I had to take a 30-minute detour to walk around here because they blocked off where we were initially going to have it. Now, despite everything that they've said about the police needing more funding, everything that they've said about the fears of defunding the police, we have all sorts of weapons, equipment, Bearcats, and I don't even know what kind of vehicles these are in Gresham Park right now. I've never seen police mobilize like this. I've never seen the city mobilize like this to shut down public peaceful protest as they have today. This is pathetic, and we are asking for more, and we are saying stop Cop City. If you can't find the funding for people to be housed, for people to have the basic necessities, then this is a sham. These people do not care about you. They're simply protecting their interests. These police work as private security for private interests. Cut it now.
Okay, I'm back.
All right.
All right. So moving on from that, you know, difficult set of topics, things are unfortunately going to get a little more difficult. Let's talk about this recent set of congressional antics and shenanigans. We're going to start with the removal. Let's start with this. So the theatrical removal of Ilhan Omar from her committee.
Foreign Affairs Committee.
Yes, yes.
I believe she's still on her other committees, but she's no longer on Foreign Affairs.
Right.
Technically, Eric Swalwell and Adam Schiff were both taken off their committees first. But because the Foreign Affairs Committee, I can't remember if it's because it's a standing committee or not. I can't remember. There's some rules of that committee required that this goes to a full chamber vote as opposed to just like unceremonious dismissal. So this goes before the floor, and this is on the grounds that she is anti-Semitic and that she undermines the U.S. relationship with Israel, which, I mean, that at least is like is that a good reason to remove her? No, but like that's at least a little bit more, you know, to the point about why they want to get rid of her. So party line votes to oust her. I was a little surprised that the Democrats all stuck behind her. That was a little surprising because, I mean, a number of them have certainly thrown her under the bus for her remarks against Israel, and only like and of the comments that they kind of pointed at, right? I mean, the closest thing to like anything resembling anything anti-Semitic was like something where she said that I can't remember the exact quote exactly, but it was like
the line in question, it's in not to relitigate this whole thing because this was a whole discourse right. When it happened,
but yeah,
specifically she was talking about members of Congress getting donations from AIPAC,
yes, the Israeli lobby.
And basically, you know, when it came down to certain people's votes, she said, you know, kind of casually, and I don't really see how you're making this about anti-Semitism unless you're reaching. Her line was, it's all about the Benjamins, baby. And she's making a reference to, you know, to a rap track. It's nothing big. It's nothing I can see as malicious.
Well, and I mean, it's one of those things, not to excuse it, but like, frankly, like, the stereotype with, you know, that is anti-Semitic, right, of Jews and money, right? It's kind of just one of those things that's just, like, so entrenched in mainstream culture that, like... And again, like, people pointed out that, like, McCarthy had said the same stuff. It's just about, you know, different Jews because we're really litigating this idea of who's a good Jew and who's a bad Jew. Like,
there you go,
we're
exactly. Living
in Nazi Germany again. I mean, because that's exactly the same tactic they used. So, like, you know, you have that, and it's unfortunate, right, in the sense that, I mean, it was 100% predictable. We saw it coming a mile away. They said they were going to do it, and, you know, anytime that they say they're going to do something that's, like, mean and hateful, there's nothing stopping them from doing it, wouldn't they?
And I think the real reason they got her wasn't even about the AIPAC comment. I never thought the AIPAC criticism was sincere the first time it came around.
Well, I mean, there was other comments, but those comments were more so pointed criticism of Israel, which, of course, is conflated to just be broad anti-Semitism in this country.
That too, but more specifically, I think, like, there's a lot of rage at her for when Elliot Abrams was at the Foreign Affairs Committee for whatever reason, and she decided to question him on the El Mazote massacre.
Mm.
People have been fuming since that moment, and I kind of feel like this is, like... this was the desire to give her her comeuppance, even though I personally think I think questioning war criminals is a moral and normal thing to do.
Well, it's not that normal, which is like, you know, which is why, you know, her being on that committee was good, right? You know, right. In terms of like, you know, kind of trying to bring a little bit of truth to power and whatnot. I mean, because these war criminals generally get a, you know, just an easy. An easy pass, right?
Right.
And it's just, I don't know. It's I'm not shocked in any way by this, right? And it's like, it's just, again, the nature of how they conduct business as a caucus and whatnot. You know, it's one of those things, and you know, I've seen, you know, I think probably the more interesting story here, right, is just seeing, you know, a lot of the speeches on the floor afterwards, or like during the vote, right, where you have, I mean, I think a lot of Democrats, mainly AOC, gave a really big speech about how this is about, you know, Islamophobia again, and it's kind of like one of those things where we sort of, I don't know if we've totally pretended that it's gone away, but it definitely feels like it has less oxygen in the room, and it's probably shouldn't, because it's still very much a real problem for these communities. Mm-hmm. But you know, and yeah, it's like it's tied to that probably more than anything, right? She's an easy person to sort of target and bully because she's part of communities that we, especially in their base, right? They don't care about, you know, Muslims or people of color and stuff like that. So like, you know, any chance you get to like own them is always going to be jumped on, unfortunately, by these vipers. And yeah, I mean, that's kind of the main thing here. I mean, there was one, I still think it was ridiculous. Like George Santos comes out there to sort of give a speech about how, like, you know, he's standing with the Jewish community after like,
Very interesting.
You know, after this guy, and like, I don't know if you've seen like his explanations, some of which have not been fully public, about his, like, you know, identifying as a Jew, but like he's mentioned before, and he's like under his, one of his various aliases, right? It was, he had a Jewish last name, and it was explicitly to make more money off of them, because for his found, like, whatever he was doing, like his scam, you know, dog foundation, right? It was easier to get money from Jewish people if you had a Jewish last name, according to him, at least. So, like, this guy who's essentially targeting them for money, for scamming them, right? You know, he's targeting them directly. He's treated as, like he's gonna be this voice that we consider for anti-Semitism, right? And obviously, you know, some Republicans are acting like, oh, this is like fair play or whatever, which is, again, just bullshit, because of, you know, I think their arguments were tied to different ideas of, like, you know, like, well, you know, they kicked off Marjorie Taylor Greene and Paul Gosar off committees. And for those comparisons, I think like the Gosar one, like he was kicked off for that meme of, like, I think it was some anime video where he's like decapitating AOC and Joe Biden, and like that was seen as, like, you know, an actionable threat of violence. I mean, it seems relatively tame in comparison, but like Marjorie Taylor Greene was kicked off because, I mean she should be probably kicked out of Congress, to be honest. Like,
right,
it's like, where do you start with her? And certainly, again, you know, not someone who they can really use as, like, you know, we're against anti-Semitism when you have, you know, Miss Jewish Space Lasers herself.
Yeah.
In Congress, in, like, you know, at a focal point in your caucus too, right? You know, she was there every step of the way next to McCarthy for those judiciary hearing, for the you know, speaker vote and stuff like that. Like, come on.
That's what, well, I mean, that's exactly it. There's also another set of details that got me with this. Mm-hmm. So, like, and you touched on this one earlier. One is that I am surprised that the Democratic line was to stick with Omar. I thought they were going to throw her under the bus again. But for even Hakim, no, she's been adequately punished for those remarks. She's done enough growth and change. That was like, okay. On the one hand, now I'm like, does that mean Ilhan Omar is softening her policy? But then on the other hand, for the Democratic coalition to be a little more tightly knit, is that a net good or bad? That is definitely interesting.
And I think, you know, some of it is like, maybe it's just the circumstances of them being in the minority.
Yeah.
Right. Where like the minority party is always able to like create this more united front. Right. And that's like why the GOP can't legislate. And that's why we're taking this vote and another vote that we'll talk about that they, you know, took a lot of courage to bring to the floor. But, you know, like it's, you know, like they're only doing performative stuff because they can't really agree on anything policy meaningful wise, right? Because like half of them, probably a good half of their caucus at this point, especially in the House, is just bomb throwers. They're there to like just, you know, stir shit and like not really like do anything, just grind the system to a halt. And when that's your, you know, your bottom line, and like you have like these very extreme positions that you're not going to deviate from, it's hard for the people to actually, you know, work with them. So like, I kind of wonder if, you know, I mean, I would think if this was, if the Democrats were in the majority, this wouldn't have come to a vote in the first place. But I kind of wonder if they were able to, you know, man the line a little bit more. And even like the Hakeem Jeffries comment, right? I mean, you were like, you were kind of pleasantly impressed, but it's still like, it's still kind of like, come on, is this really like, why do we have to play into that narrative at all?
Right.
But whatever. I mean, I somewhat get like the strategic interest in it, but it's still just, it's frustrating. And it's just something that you have to unfortunately live with.
Well, speaking of people who are frustrated, two members of the Republican caucus were basically, and I think they're named here. Let me pull up the article. Oh my gosh, where's my mouse? So two Republican House caucus members literally said this was the stupidest vote in the world. And then as soon as they said it, they were begging reporters not to tell leadership what they said. But the specific members are Ken Buck and Mike Simpson.
Okay.
And I think Ken Buck is on the Foreign Affairs Committee.
Yeah, and they were concerned about, and like, I don't think they're necessarily thinking of this from like the perspective of like, they think she deserved to stay on there, right? They're talking about pure just politics, right? The visibility of it. And like, yeah, like all your, like the response to it has been like, well, what about, you know, all these members in your caucus who like, you know, just, I mean, and again, too, I mean, there was I think Swalwell brought up that, you know, like the Judiciary Committee had that tweet of like Kanye, Elon, Trump. And, you know, they left that for months after Elon has gone, you know, about as far on the anti-Semitic ladder as you can possibly get into like day and age. Like, it's just weird.
Exactly. But I think, like, again, my first instinct looking at this is like more performative garbage. But to the point that even members of the Republican caucus will look at this and be like, yep, more performative garbage. That's what we're doing.
Well, and it's performative garbage that like explicitly has the opportunity to backfire too.
Exactly. Exactly. Because again, like this is only going to serve to galvanize Ilhan Omar's image as like this, you know, speaker of truth to power. And, you know, in the age of spin, this will spin pretty well.
Assuming they actually are interested in spinning, you know.
That's true. That's true.
that's always the problem with the Democrats. They don't always commit to actually, you know, using the tactics of their enemies and, you know, for good.
Fingers crossed things change, but, you know, again, as time has shown, you are right. This is, you gotta spin it if you want it to spin.
Yeah.
Beyblade, let her rip. Okay, speaking, so on the subject of more performative nonsense, this one took the cake. Congress bravely resolves to denounce the horrors of socialism.
The horrors of socialism?
Oh, dear God. Dear God. Let's get into this one. So, first of all, without having read anything about this, I'm like, I'm betting a representative from Florida penned this. And sure enough, it was.
Who was it?
Let's look it up. let's start with this. The measure, which runs three pages, says, and I quote, "Socialist ideology necessitates a concentration of power that has time and time again collapsed into communist regimes, totalitarian rule and brutal dictatorships." It argues
how many places that have like identified like as socialist and not communist made that collapse, as he puts it.
Again, it's such a weird thing to say, right? Because like, you know, Chile was socialist and then they got couped. Guatemala was leaning in that direction. There was a coup there.
Well, in general, too, right? Yeah, anytime we're going to bring up the concentration of power, and
it's a concentration of power. Like, okay, like we're not doing that. Okay,
cool. Yeah, like I mean, power is definitely concentrated here.
again, there's nothing wrong with concentrates. You just got to know how to dilute them, okay? You don't drink cold brew concentrate out the can. You mix it in some water, guys. Come on. So, this is from the office of Representative Maria Elvira Salazar. Let's just look up what's her district. Is it Miami? Please don't tell me it's Miami. She's from Miami. Okay, Florida's 27th district. It's fucking Miami. Look at this. It's fucking Miami.
Oh, is this the district? I think it is. Maybe not. I'm not sure. There's one district in Florida that has, they might have changed it on gerrymandering, but it was originally gerrymandered to have like this like weird sliver cut out of the district.
I can pull up the map. Like, it doesn't pull up on Google Maps. That should be a feature they should have. Okay, yeah, it's...
I like how it's just, like, on Wikipedia and maps, it just has, like, this big, like, block over the ocean.
Yeah, because they have to get Key Biscayne into it, and I think, like, if you do look at... Again, you have to be a major dork to know this shit, but, like, I think it covers the entirety of, like, the U.S. coastline, so if you look at, like, Michigan's congressional districts...
Yeah.
It'll include part of, like, the Great Lakes, too, for whatever reason.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, I mean,
you gotta take care of those boomers with their houseboats.
Yep,
they deserve representation too.
I mean, if you have a houseboat, do you get a Miami mailing address? Is that what that is?
That's a good question.
I don't know, but yes, this is yet another project of the Miami industrial complex, and man, have some interesting takes come out from this. So, namely, a surprising development in this is somehow Steny Hoyer voted against the resolution, but Pelosi did vote for it.
Of the Democratic votes in this were so weird. Like, I know, like, the one, I don't know why Ro Khanna was, like, the big, like, surprise here or whatever, but I know a lot of people were, like...
You know what I think it is with Ro Khanna, and this is really what I think it is that... He enjoys the Breonna Joy Gray, Glenn Greenwald, progressive media industrial complex circuit, because you can technically fundraise off of those people. You just got to say the right things. But then ultimately, when it comes down to like committing on something like this, he's over here talking about Bismarck.
Yeah, again, I mean,
not everyone's serious.
List, I mean, like, it's, you have how many Democrats voted nay? 86, 14 voted present. There's 6 people that didn't vote, 3
Three Republicans, 3 Republicans. That's interesting, yeah.
Or there was Republicans just not there.
That's
what I want. Well, actually, if they're not voting, then yeah, they might just not have been there.
Yeah, but like you had everything from like, okay, people who were like ready to vote gung ho yay on this, but then the nays had some interesting responses, and it was this thing of like, I think the best examples of them, not that I agree with them entirely, was like, yeah, let's denounce the socialism, but is this the best use of our time?
Right, yeah, I think that's kind of, you know, what it is. And, like, some of them, like, I mean, I look at some of that list. There are people who are in slightly more, like, you know, purpley districts or whatever.
Yeah.
The New Democrats that put out a post that they were very proud to have denounced all the members of their caucus.
I am proud to say, Sri Tanidar voted no on it. We got to count them there.
Oh, my God. Who would have thought the only true pure-blooded socialist in Congress, Sri Thanadar.
Would be a lab company owner. Who would have thought?
Who would have thought? He's just like, you know, I've seen the horrors in my labs. they sure as hell aren't socialist.
Oh my God. Well, and just, you know, my quick thing is, come on, where's the resolution denouncing fascism?
Right, and like that's the thing too. It's like it's one of those things, and it sort of pairs with some other stuff. I sent because one of my colleagues and I, we've kind of joked because like there was a couple students who had asked for like excused absences when they went to a CPAC last year.
Oh, God.
Which was, you know, that was something special. But like I had joked, I sent that convention that you would, I think you had sent, right, with the Charlie Kirk turning point thing with Bolsonaro.
Oh yeah, that's going
and
on.
It's like, is this the must see? And it's like, it's crazy where it's like, yeah, like, I mean, it was, obviously there's a long history of like propping up, you know, far right dictators and stuff like that, and you know, people of that ilk in this country. But it's so wild where like the level that we just push that into like the Republican mainstream nexus, right? Where it's just like, you know, like you can't denounce fascism in that party because like, well, you know, might upset the base or anything like that. You know, let alone, you know, religious fundamentalism, that'll never get denounced unless it's, you know, Sharia law.
And the amount of dog whistling, like, again, I'm not trying to go like 2016 panic mode again, but at the same time, like, did you see that video of like the British Tories and one guy was talking about feeding people castor oil in a clear reference to Mussolini? God.
Yeah.
And even like you'll see guys who have like weird posts about like free helicopter rides in Chile. I'll drive the helicopter. And it's like, okay, not only is this not funny, this is also just like you're really dog whistling. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
But those are, you know, just, you know, young people expressing their views. They're not blindly parroting things they don't understand because they haven't learned the true horrors of socialism or something.
Right. And well, of course, that's like, you know, the take after like, you know, Kevin McCarthy's like, you know, what's really scary is that over 100 Democrats, you know, didn't denounce the horrors of socialism. And it's like, come on. Like, again, and it's like, you know, it's kind of brought back this, can they define socialism, blah, 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 and all that. And, you know, I'm, you know, not to get into like a big philosophy lesson on it, but like, this is just, it's so silly. And again, like, you know, some of the people were like, well, I just want to get back to like doing real work. It's like, I hope that's just them like being performative themselves, like where they like, because there's no way they think that the Republican House is going to ever attempt to pass any real or meaningful policy in the next 2 years. Like, there's no way you could possibly, in good conscience, actually believe that.
Well, let's take a detour. And maybe I wanted you to put on one of your other hats, which is pro wrestling.
Okay.
Has the kayfabe ever been broken in real time? Have there ever been like, you know, clear kayfabe going on, and someone just winks at the audience to let them know it's all fake? Because that's what I kind of feel like is going on here, where it's like, no one's going to admit it's a performance.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously happened in wrestling, but like, it's definitely happening here a bit. And like, on some level, like, not as heavily, but like, I mean, one thing that stands out to me, and like, again, like, you know, during the Omar vote, they point out that, you know, like, Paul Gosar threatened a member of Congress. And it's like, but he was also talking with that said member during the speaker vote.
Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
I mean, I'm not like, this isn't like to like rag on AOC and whatnot, but I think that like the point of like, I don't think she really felt that threatened by Paul Gosar, right? Like, is the guy an absolute ghoul and probably, you know, shouldn't be in Congress? Sure. But like, I don't think he's like uniquely more ghoulish than, you know, 90% of his caucus.
Yeah. I don't know. All in all with this thing, right, is the thing about a resolution is it kind of lets you know where everyone says they say they are, right? And the question is, why now, right? As this like bizarre inflation crisis we're in is, you know, keeps seeming to get get odd. Interest rates are going up. There's this recession that, you know, people are trying not to envision, right?
Well, and it's like kind of weird. I mean, like, that's kind of a separate issue with like the economy, where it's like, right, we have like one of the weirdest like economies ever right now, where it's like, because it's like the job report that just came back, which was like really good, like really low unemployment and stuff like that, and you know, a lot of jobs created. But then like, it's paired with well, and part of it too is like, you have like this like tech bubble collapsing again,
right?
You know, just talk about cycles, and you know, politics in the real world, like, you know, big shocker there, but you have like the tech bubble collapsing, and some of that, right, is like some just like this corporate greed where like they don't need to fire these people that they are firing. But you have all that stuff that's not being replicated elsewhere. The interest rates are high, which usually leads to a recession, but then there's more jobs and stuff. It's, we're in a weird economic state right now.
Right. And like, I think specifically Salazar in her justification is like, 40% of Zoomers identify with socialism or whatever, or like,
yes,
this is this rising tide of it. And it's like, I don't appreciate this thread that gets put out in the discourse, especially by, and I say liberals with a capital L, which is basically everyone who's in that Democratic Republican framework, right? Although right. Some of them are moving fascist, but that's a separate point, right? Is that this trend towards socialism is a recent phenomenon. It's not rooted in anything organic, and it's this foreign ideology, right?
Well, and the other thing with that too is like a lot of that is like tied to this weird report about it where like basically the question was like, it was basically like, do you like kind of like just generically like recoil in fear at, you know, the mere mention of socialism? And it was, you know, just more accepting of that ideology than, you know, the Cold War people. It wasn't anything that was like, you know, like, do you like, you know, do you read a little bit of Karl Marx every night before you go to sleep? You're like, do you pray on the, do you pray on the manifesto?
I don't know what to make of them to this, right? Because you can only think like that if you're obscuring like your understanding of American history. And when you wrap it up in this great man, civic religion stuff, right?
Well, that was explicitly her comparison, right? Was that people like that they're more attracted to that than like the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, specifically Jefferson and those guys, right? And like, it's, again, Howard Zinn really was onto something with the people's history, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not to keep bringing it up, but like, this is, again, this is, I think my point holds true where it's like, if you're looking where to start with that book, because you have to erase these great man myths. Either you believe them sincerely and you have a limited worldview, or the other take is you understand that having that view obscures other things that are useful.
Well, if you have that view, I mean, just treat it like, you know, anime or any other TV show, right? It's good entertainment, but not necessarily, you know, representative history.
Exactly, exactly. And like, to say that socialism is this foreign ideology, right? You had socialists serving in the Union during the Civil War. You had cross-pollination with Karl Marx's movement from that. You had socialists in the labor movement, communists in the labor movement, the Wobblies, all these, you know, progressive changes that we talk about, right? They weren't voted in. These were like American socialists fighting for those rights, trying to even get elected with, you know, the municipal socialists, and I think St. Louis was it, right? And with the, you know, waves of German immigration, they bring socialist ideology with them, and it has a home in the American political tradition. I'm not trying to be too patriotic here, but, you know, to say that it's foreign is, it's pure Red Scare bullshit to me. You know what I'm saying? If you want me to be patriotic socialist for a second, you know, I say it's as American as baseball and apple pie, but I digress. It's, right. it's more performative bullshit from a house that at this point cannot and will not get any business done.
No, or even like I wouldn't be shocked if we get like actual policy, but it's like stuff that just won't happen, right? Because like it'll never be taken up by the Senate because they're only voting on the stuff to like. That's just like the craziest.
What is the Senate stuff up to right now? They're probably balling,
that's actually, right? Something like, I was like thinking about as like I was like looking through the outline yesterday, where I was like, you know, like the Senate has just vanished, right? Because it's like, and like it's like, yeah, like there's like a Democratic controlled Senate, more Democrat than the last time by like one seat. You know, maybe that's not the. I mean, it's a big deal for appointments and stuff like that, but like it's just because of the nature of the business, all the stuff that the Senate's going to do now is just the stuff that like we don't pay as much attention to, like appointments usually and stuff like that. So I don't know if it's just one of those things that's going to. I don't know.
there was a tweet I read earlier a couple weeks ago, which is, we haven't heard anything from Lin-Manuel Miranda, and it makes me worried. That's exactly how I feel about the Senate. What are they up to? What are they up to? Because they, I mean, you don't even have to work in these jobs, let's be honest.
Well, a lot of their work is, you know, and I'm not even like saying this cynically. There's a decent amount of work that goes to just raising funds for
pretty election. much.
Like
what business is the Senate
4 hours every day?
There you go.
But yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, it's the Senate has just kind of vanished. And it's kind of interesting, right? I mean, we kind of have, you know, there's sort of that trope of like the rotating villain and whatnot. But you know, like, people are so concerned about like Sinema going independent, and like, yeah, I think she should be out of Congress. I'm sure she will be out very soon. She sucks for a number of reasons, but like, you know, I don't think it's just weird where it's like you're not gonna have. I don't know. It's just a weird thing where it's like you're not like going to hear much of them unless there's like a major appointment coming out and stuff like that, or if there's a major crisis and you have to, you know, they have to pass policy to address it. But
shoot, I haven't even heard from Bernie.
Yeah, he's.
I just get fundraising mails from him, and keep in mind, we haven't even addressed this fact, and I don't know if this is worth bringing up, right? But after the 2020 campaign, the fact that everyone's Act Blue records got sold.
Oh,
that's why these fundraising emails have been so aggressive. It's like, I voted for Bernie. I don't even like any of these people. How did this happen? That's why.
Right. Yeah. And I was going to say too, like, I mean, I was like wondering if it was just because of like, you know, Twitter, because I was like, I don't even like see that many from like senators anymore. I mean, they'll occasionally like comment on current stuff, but they're not really like talking about what they're doing anymore. And that's, I mean, what is there to do? Right. You know,
right. It's fascinating to have so much power and like basically have your dick in your hands. It's so cool.
Well, and it's like, I mean, the Senate is, it's sort of like it has issues passing policy anyways. So,
right. Like,
you know, it's really just crippled now. It's like, what's the point of like imagine like working that hard to like, you know, get policy through just for it to die in the House. Like that's just depressing.
In such a system, you know, it does make you shudder to imagine like who exactly would thrive in this environment. Like who would want to gain this power, and like what would their day-to-day life be like? Which brings us to Santos Watch. I don't even know where to begin with Santos Watch, because like every day there's something new with this guy.
It's insane. Like, I don't understand how this man has made it through life up to this point. Like, truly, I don't know, because everything, it's like every day it's some new lie. There was like, even something like the low-hanging fruit, right, where you have, like, this recent thing where he claimed to be, like, a producer on, like, the Spider-Man Broadway play that he had nothing. Why would you, like, put that on? Like, again, like, you just, like, all, like, let me just, like, stack my resume with the most random bullshit I can think of just to take credit for it, right? I mean, he had the whole thing about, you know, and what was even funnier too was he was like concerned because like there was like one member who had voted to not, you know, get rid of Omar, right, because they were a Democrat, and he's like, well, he's trying to like raise money off my Jewish constituents even after doing this. And it's like, yeah, I'm sure he has plenty of money to go around from the Jewish community in his district, right? You know, just what was the other thing I'd put on there? He has recused himself from committees. I feel like that which may ones? Have any.
Oh wow. Okay.
So he's just committee-less right now, which I mean, it's happened before. But yeah, the guy's just, he's not on committees, and you know, I mean, I don't know if he was like threatened and he went along with it, or if he, you know, just was like in the goodness of his own heart, he'll just collect those, you know, that salary and, you know, have a long lunch break.
Man. I feel like Santos probably just got elected. This is my new theory. I think he is basically a rotating villain for hire. Anytime they need a story to go away, he'll drop a new shenanigan. I think that's his value. I'm not sure what he's angling for. You know what I mean? Like, there's some conservative members of the House, you look at them and you're like, okay, this guy's a glass-eyed psycho who wants to start a war with China. This is a fundamentalist Christian who wants to ban abortion. This is a media figure trying to spin it into a political career, and they can, you know, get a lobbying gig out of it.
Sure. Or what, you know, make Santos's more money on the media career.
That's what I'm saying. Like, what is Santos's end goal here?
I really don't know. And I mean, like, how can you know when, you know, like, the man himself is so unknowable because everything is on, like, built on a house of cards, right? Like, I don't know. I mean, like, I get that the, you know, I think that Republicans saw him as like, well, he's some guy who, like, offers us some, like, base level diversity just so we can just, like, say, like, we're okay with the gays and, you know, Mexicans and stuff like that, or, you know, Hispanics, whatever. But it's just so nutty that, like, this is someone that, like, just exists, like, period, all around.
Yeah, like, I don't know, because this is the guess I had with Kristen Sinema, right? It's like, how does she go from, like, a Occupy Wall Street type, sure, to just a craven corporate ghoul? And I think it's just, like, what we're going to start seeing, especially if we continue to have this system as it currently stands, people who are just independently selling influence, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, our first-past-the-post system kind of allows for that, especially when the party can't exert control over its candidates. I don't know if a parliamentary model is the solution necessarily. However,
well, I mean, there's been times where when we've never had a parliamentary system in the United States, but there's been times where the party had more influence. And I mean, and it's tricky, right? Because there's benefits to both, but definitely, you know, we're seeing increasingly, like, the lack of partisan control over its, like, some of its candidates has led to just the weirdest people.
Not even Trump, you know what I mean? And he's the tip of the spear when it comes to this example, right? So
exactly, yeah.
Yeah, it's still too early to guess, and I'm just spitballing here, but I think, yeah, in an age of inaction but a lot of influence and power, you might as well just take a real estate approach to it. And I think that's what Sinema and Santos are really offering, is a kind of piece of, like, well, listen, if you're just trying to get access, if you're just trying to lobby, hell, if you want a certain result, my vote is for sale. Come find
me. Sure.
I think that's really it. Yeah, I think, I don't know. Santos Watch is going to continue, but I don't know how it's going to conclude. To someone whose intentions are a little more clear, let's maybe move back down to Florida. This is not getting better. I thought the topics would progress into something at least a little lighter. No, I'm mad again.
It's like a mountain range, right? We're going up, we're going through the peaks and the valleys here. I mean, just everything about Ron DeSantis, right? He's been, I mean, from, like, the most lighthearted, right, is, like, fucking removing the sales tax on gas stoves. Like, this stupid, like,
a utility that only 10% of Floridians have.
This is, and will they replace them with another gas stove? I guess in that case, you know, oh man, you're free from the sales tax. But it's just so, like, performative online bullcrap. And then you have, like, the rest of this, right? I mean, the big stuff, right, is, you know, he's been going after, he's been going after the education system for a while now, but he's made a few specific attacks recently, right? He attacked AP was it, is it AP Black History or AP African American History, whichever it's called.
Which is a pilot program, by the way. It's not a fully accredited AP course yet.
That's what I kind of figured too. And like he said, like, well, like we're banning it from schools. Like, and again, like AP classes are electives. AP African American History would be like a super elective, right? You're going to get, I mean, I'm sure there's some schools that probably couldn't fill that classroom, right? I'm not like trying to like throw shade. I'm just acknowledging it, right? Like that's probably a
class you would take as an independent study in a high school that's probably well funded, just to begin with.
Yeah, like it's, you know, like, I mean, maybe I'm just like tainting my own like high school experience, right? Where there was, you know, not enough black people to fill a classroom, and even like, you know, the white people that would be interested in this, right? You know, it's, you know, like you have to like fill that in your schedule in a weird way. That's, you know, you have a lot of things you have to take in high school. You don't necessarily have those liberties. Right. But regardless, right? So he bans that because there's stuff where like, oh well, like what does this have to do with, you know, queer theory and stuff like that? Which is like, well, you know, what about queer black people, for starters? And then I don't just like a lot of this stuff, right? You know, with that, where it's just, you know, kind of like going after these different concepts because, you know, he doesn't agree with them. Obviously, he probably doesn't agree with, you know, the way AP African American history would be taught anyways. I don't even know why he bothers defending it on any base level.
I mean, they already got an issue with AP US history, you know what I mean?
We've
already beat that horse, so.
So, like, the AP, and, like, this is bad on them, that they, like, remove from the curriculum a bunch of the stuff that he found objectionable. Of course, you also have the stuff banning books for, I can't remember what the specific guidelines of that policy were, but it has led to situations where libraries are just clearing their shelves entirely, because why, you know, risk the chance that like some parent finds this objectionable and, you know, shuts the whole thing down when you could just, you know, avoid it altogether, right? That's kind of relates to the policing argument too, right? Is, you know, the fear of the police makes you sort of act in a much more cagey and reserved way.
Yeah.
Even if you aren't really doing anything wrong, right? You don't want to be like, you know, construed as doing something slightly wrong, right? You know, don't go like 1 mile over the speed limit when you're at those, you know, speed traps and stuff like that, because you don't know what'll happen. So there's that. And then, of course, he goes after the College Board as well. And sort of, I can't remember the exact parameters of this policy, but I believe it sort of prevents state-funded universities, public universities, from having, like, these diversity programs and stuff like that.
Well, specifically, he wants diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives defunded. I don't know what... It didn't even make sense from, like, a funding perspective how they were going to do this, right? But... And this is probably going to tie into our earlier discussion we were having on police brutality, but that's a separate point. Like, basically, he was just like, these initiatives are making universities more woke, and we're going to defund them so that they wither on the vine. That's basically what he said. I'm paraphrasing, but that's basically what he said.
Well, and I don't think that these programs so much make the universities more woke anyways. I mean, what does woke really mean on any meaningful level? But like, what it does do is it puts more barriers to entry for, you know, people of color and all these other groups of people who are underrepresented, right? Where they already have a hard enough time, you know, getting into these institutions and having, you know, being able to do things at those institutions. You know, in a way that's, you know, that they're protected. This just makes that harder for them, right? It doesn't have anything to do with, you know, the types of, you know, what people are really learning in the classroom, right? I mean, there's some stuff where, like, I cover it in class, and, like, I'm always kind of wondering how it'll be received. I don't think I've indoctrinated anyone, right? But, like, there's stuff where, like, I say it, so I'm like, would this be, like, banned in the state of Florida? Would I get, like, in trouble if this was in the state of Florida, right? When I'm talking about, like, electoral politics, and I mentioned like the Southern strategy, is that allowed to be discussed, right? Because it's like, well, it's sort of implicating, you know, certain groups of people as being responsible for, you know, racial suppression and whatnot, which I guess maybe that stuff's okay. I don't know, maybe it's okay to talk about the repression. It's just not okay to like pair that with the moral imperative of, you know, that's bad.
Possibly And not to be cynical for a second, right? But on the subject of, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion, because it is this framework that is entering corporate and education spaces like a lot more visibly in recent years.
Sure.
I'm quite cynical on, you know, their ability to actually be a progressive force in these environments. I really think they really exist more so from a organizational damage control perspective. You know what I'm saying? It's a kind of thing to say, well, we have one. So even if an incident happened, we can say we had the tools to deal with it. That's me as a pure, jaded person.
I think it's like a PR and liability thing more than anything else.
More than anything else, yeah. But, like, again, like, do DEI offices in any institution do anything meaningfully to counter racial demographics on campus? Do they counter hiring demographics on campus? I don't necessarily think so. I think they really, really, you know, they're more so of like enablers of a status quo that is at least visibly amenable to some kind of social progress. But, you know, I don't see them as fundamentally transformational forces. And this is not a novel observation. There's other scholars who have noted this kind of thing. But when this criticism comes from the right, it's not along these same lines. It is this culture war bullshit once again. The defund line from DeSantis is funny because he's trying to be like, oh, you want to defund the police? I'll defund your department. Very, very weird shit.
Which, I mean, like, let's face it, those departments weren't funded.
They weren't funded. It was a demand protesters had that never got carried out. I don't understand, like, the victim complex the right has. It's so funny to watch.
And we've talked a little bit about this, too, but, like, you know, offline, where, like, just kind of the idea of, you know, is, like, DeSantis just too online to like be viable in like, you know, he's obviously doing all this to like run for president, right? To like run in the Republican primary, but even like to a Republican primary voter, I don't necessarily know like if this is like, well, he's actually, you know, like Trump's talking the talk, but DeSantis is walking the walk. But I also don't think he's like doing policies that like really interest him that much on a fundamental level, right? Like, I mean, I'm sure they love the bigotry and stuff like that, or at least a lot of them do. But I think that like, you know, the appeal for Trump for a lot of people was tied to the fact that like he at least had, you know, vague policy notions that they at least believed on some level would actually, you know, improve their lives. You know, even building the wall, right? Just, you know, like preventing Mexicans from stealing their jobs, as like stupid of a trope as that is. You know, I can at least understand on some level where that flies. Whereas, you know, does this stuff like, does like oh, like I can buy a gas stove here with no sales tax because, you know, this is as if that would even protect like a national ban on it anyways, if that actually were to come to pass, which I mean, I don't think it will.
The gas utilities would never let it happen. I'm still surprised people don't understand that.
Yeah. And there's other stuff where just like there's the lack of, I don't know, or even like I said, just some of the stuff where like the CRT thing, like, I think that that's played its course, right? I think it worked for Youngkin. Maybe it worked for Youngkin in Virginia when he got elected, right? I mean, that was sort of the narrative. I don't know if that was really, you know, honestly what happened, but, you know, it seemingly worked for him. I don't think it's really worked anywhere else, right? And he's, of course, had this other policy that, like, just came out with, like, the potentially, like, creating, like, some weird, like, menstrual cycle database for female athletes.
Well, that was a new thing too. Yeah. Oh my God. What a creep. What a fuck.
In order to like, you know, like again, going after the trans community, which, and again, I mean like Michigan highlighted, you know, at least here, I don't think that plays. I'm not like pretending that like we're here, like, you know, that we're like, you know, deeply progressive on, you know, trans issues as a state, but like surely the bigotry is not an enticing enough, you know, thing to give voters to actually turn out, you know, a decent chunk of them. And it's just, again, it's like, let's just go after whatever. I don't know. I mean, like, I think it's crazy with, DeSantis, because, like, I think, you know, as a governor, especially with, like, the type of legislature he has, is, like, they're able to pursue a lot of the stuff that they've always, like, talk about as a party way more and just pursue, like, maximal harm just for the purpose of, like, his electoral efforts and ambitions. Like, it's disgusting. And I don't know if I have any other, like, major thing to say about it.
Not sure if DeSantis is going to be able to purely emulate Trump's success as much as he wants to, but
speaking of which, you've seen his ad when he ran for governor, right? The one where it's just like he's like playing with his kid and it's like, oh, build the wall, and he's like reading her.
I do remember that one. Like that was so stupid. That was so
stupid. I showed that to my students and the first reaction was, is that real? And it's like, I mean, like, honestly, like, if I'm Trump or Trump's campaign manager, I'm just going to run a negative ad that's just that ad.
See, Trump's just line of calling him Ron DeSanctimonious really is what flies. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, on some level. And I mean, like, he's been going after him, too, just on like kind of like vaccine hypocrisy and stuff like that as well. Which, I mean, like, again, like, also meaningful. I know, like, we're kind of done with COVID. I mean, COVID's not done with us, but you know, we definitely, as a society, are definitely finished with it. But, you know, I just, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's just like all these things where it's just like whatever plays with like the conception of the GOP base as it appears online, which is like the most like, you know, brainless version of it. That's just been how DeSantis has run his playbook.
This is a thing like I don't know how to have this conversation with some people about what you see online may not necessarily mirror reality. And when it comes down to this, right, like how many American adults use Twitter? I don't think we have a clear figure on that, but I'm sure it's not the entirety. You know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't know about the gas stove discourse until it made its way to me, and it was like 3 days right of content I'd missed out, and I'm like, oh, this is what you guys are mad about. I didn't understand what was going on. Same way with like trans athlete stuff, right? Who is following these stories? Who is watching women swimming to be this outraged about it? You know what I'm saying? I'm not.
Hold on, if they're watching, well, their outrage is tied to something else. I can tell you that much.
I mean, of course, it's all psychosexual garbage with these people. I'm aware of that. But what, like, again, this is stuff that like you did not know about it until it was foisted upon you, or you went out of your way to look it up. And the internet is the only place where things can be foisted on you more easily because you got to fill the content machine, right? So based on how the algorithm works, you're subjected to new things or you're subjected to more of the same.
Yeah.
This being said, there's some shit that you can only know if you're highly online. You know what I mean? Like, I was having a conversation with a friend about this stuff, right? Like, where they didn't understand the Shinzo Abe stuff. Because how would you know? Unless you've been, sure, like, on forums and shit, like, how would you understand some of this?
Yeah, well, I think too, news, like, even, you know, like, on Twitter and, like, these other, like, bigger, like, just generalized social media sites, too, I think a lot of it, too, is just people pretending to be in on the joke, right?
Like, some extent, yeah.
Like, especially with, like, the Shinzo Abe stuff, right? I think it was just kind of like, I mean, do they know anything about the guy? No, but they saw that, like, you know, all these people think it's funny, so they think it's funny, too. And it's like, yeah, and Shinzo Abe, maybe that ties to it, like, because it's like our general ignorance of international affairs and whatnot, like, as a country. But you know, in general, right, all these like minor things, right, you know, the gas stoves, I know, like, they covered a lot on Fox News, and that is, I guess, the most viewed, you know,
so I guess news, maybe Fox, or whatever, News, but has found a way to get themselves on the internet one way or another. But I am curious, like, let's say you are like a conservative, but you're not on the internet and you don't watch Fox News. What is your worldview like? We'd like to interview you. I'm very curious how you survived this long. You know what I mean?
And yeah, that's like, too, it's like, even like any that I've interacted with, like, half of the stuff that I've seen, like, the same. I mean, like, I a lot of them probably, you know, still have like the trans, like the anti-trans views. I don't think that they're going to turn out to vote for a candidate on those grounds. But, you know, they, I think that at the very least they do have those views. But I don't think, like, again, it's just like I don't think they care about the gas stoves. Half of them don't even cook. Like, I mean, especially like, I mean, like, it's like the people who are going to get the angriest about it, I would think, are like men who, like, you know, under traditional gender demographics aren't in the kitchen anyways. So.
Or even worse, if you've seen the steaks they've made and how they're still just like not even grilled, they're raw in the middle. There's like some kind of nasty sauce on the side. It's like,
right,
great, you're using all this gas to not even cook right. What's the point? Like,
yeah,
or even again, like not to bring the statistic up again, only 10% of households in Florida use gas stoves.
Well, and again, I think that's just sort of trying to do this national appeal. Right, for the primary, but I mean, again, and I've seen like some people talk about like speaking of online, where they're like, I think a lot of people have never actually seen DeSantis talk or anything like that,
seen him standing or seen that weird picture of him in the boots.
Yeah, like I think a lot of people have like never seen him like that, so like that might be kind of a weird thing, like in the primary and stuff like that. I don't know.
You know what? To be a governor of Florida, you have to be a little fucking weird. Like, look at Jeb.
Man, remember when we thought Jeb would be like the most controversial governor out of that state?
Oh, when we thought he was going to be Bush part two. Oh my, or part three.
How I mean, the terms of taking that realistic, but we thought at least he'd win the primary. But
one would think. One would think.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just one thing to go to show, right? Oh my god, I'm stuttering through this. It goes to show that you can never rely on your first assumptions.
That's true.
Speaking of relying on your first assumptions, this is the last item I've got on the outline.
It's probably the most important, too.
The most important one. Now, as of the time of this recording, the threat has been neutralized, quote-unquote. But there was a massive panic over a spy balloon from China in our nation's heartland.
Unbelievable. This would have never happened.
I can't believe of all the espionage methods China would use. They would choose a balloon. A
weather balloon.
The notoriously very controllable weather balloon. And yeah. you would want it over, like, uninhabited land. Like, that's what you're spying on. Really, guys? Really?
Well, it might have flown over a couple things we wouldn't have wanted to be seen, but...
What, like, Google Earth hasn't seen it already?
Right. Well, I mean, that's the thing too, right? And like, I think just the take machine on this has been just insane. And really by the take machine, I mean like elected Republicans. So like this balloon, I can't remember when it was spotted, but it was the Biden administration had already known about it by the time it was reported on. And he had told like the Pentagon to like just shoot it down. And they said, well, we have to wait till it's like, you know, over water or something like that. According to, you know, not to prop up Pete Buttigieg, but according to him, the debris field was like 7 miles wide, like, you know, a radius of 7 miles. So like, yeah, you probably don't want, you know,
that just 18 foot structure on it or something. So like, you know, especially people who are like, I'm going to shoot the thing down myself. You're going to hit a moving target 11 miles in the air.
Then they probably can't even see. You know what I mean? It's like
good invisible. Good luck.
But yeah, I mean, so that was like a thing. And then like all these takes where it's like, I'm impressed by their ability to twist any possible outcome from this into a L for Biden. They're like, well, it's, you know, it's a failure of the Biden administration that it got here in the first place. It should have been shot down beforehand.
A weather balloon.
Yes. And apparently like this had happened a number of times under Trump and they were never taken care of. So again, you know, that take falls apart. But either way, they're like, you know, the fact that it got here is a massive loss for the Biden administration. The fact that they waited to shoot it down is a loss. The fact that they shot it down shows that we're overreacting. making it a loss for Biden. And it's like, and again, it's just like, these people are so hawkish and everything too, that like, you understand that like, even like strategic victories in war come with losses, right? And like, and I'm not like, not to like, not to claim that this escalates to like an act of war or anything like that, right? But just like the fact that they're treating it like it's one, it's just insane. Like, how slow is the news cycle in that world as far as like what they're willing to cover, that this is like the thing that's like carried water for them for like the last half of this week? It's just insane, where it's like, you know, like, oh well, like, you know, the China, if they see us overreacting, it's like, no kidding, huh? What, where would they get the idea that we would be overreacting to the situation?
Oh my god. And Tony Blinken is a real shit stirrer with this nonsense too. My god. After knowing about the balloon, I have to cancel my state visit to Beijing. You really? Really over a balloon? And the response from Beijing is funny. I'm gonna read this verbatim. Lest I be mistaken for Chinese state media. China strongly disapproves of and protests against the U.S. attack on a civilian unmanned airship by force. The U.S.'s use of force is a clear overreaction and a serious violation of international practice, noting that Beijing reserves the right to make further responses that are necessary. Okay, basically they were saying that like it was a research balloon that like had blown off course, made it to the United States, and basically it was an accident and they're sorry about it. You know what I mean? There's no weapons on the thing. There's no real cameras. Like,
yeah, is it possible that that's actually correct? Maybe. But I don't know. It's just really like, again, just a silly thing where it's like, oh, you know, we probably overreact to it. And again, like, how much are you really going to get out of a surveillance balloon, right? I mean, I don't think we just like, you know, we don't like have crop circles of government secrets out in like the Nevada desert or anything like that. Like, you know, it's not.
It's also so silly, right? Because all these people talk about how, you know, you're not taking the threat of China seriously. Well, why is this balloon a threat, but satellites aren't? Why is the balloon a threat, but TikTok on your phone isn't?
Well, some of them do think that. I mean, there's an increasing number of votes.
It's always like people addicted to TikTok who are like, we got to watch out for China, man. I've always noticed that.
It's always like the weird, or even like just like, you know, gamers too, where they're like, oh man, like, you know, China's ruining this, so you're meanwhile I'm playing like every game that they own. Like it's just
so unserious. It's so unserious. And like, again, like a lot of everything we've talked about has been performative stuff from the government as of late, whether it's this denouncement of socialism, or whether it's this like fake panic over, you know, something that might have been sorted through a phone call. And even like Fox News's like histrionic response to like this balloon, right? Of like, oh my God, it's such a failure that a balloon flew off course. I'm kind of at a loss at this point. Maybe my ability to be shocked and surprised is still alive and well. Maybe they will continue to find new ways to have me lose faith in this system. I don't know. But I'm proud of my country for finding a new low today. I have never been more proud.
I don't know if it's a new low, but
it's not a new low. It's definitely a new and creative way. I'm definitely the writers of this season. Good job, guys.
I mean, that interesting. They step up their game.
It's only the first month, right? It's like what? It's the first month of the year. You know,
but we just started the second month.
Yeah, probably just started the second month. You know, let's really let's step it up. You know,
yeah.
You were doing some crazy writing last year. That one week where there were like all those governments falling and heads of state resigning.
Or dying.
Or dying? Oh my god, that was a crazy episode, man.
Well, the only leader we're mourning today is the Chinese balloon.
Man, they weren't even dropping propaganda with it. That, wouldn't it be funny if like the balloon was dropping?
Could you imagine?
Could you?
You think it's an airdrop, like
book of quotations from Mao? That'd be amazing. That would be amazing. Oh my god!
China, step up your game.
Oh my god! Any other thoughts on this balloon situation? I got nothing else.
I don't have anything either. This was something.
This was. I think I found our title for the episode. This was something.
An episode.
Oh my gosh. I guess I don't know.
We went through like peaks and valleys on this, right? There were stories that incensed us. There were stories that were some of the most pathetic things we've ever like borne witness to. This episode has it all. It's a true cash grab variety show.
Well, it is a cash grab variety show, but guess what? This show's still staying free. Yeah.
Not saying we were grabbing the cash, but you know, whatever you're getting your podcast, they get.
You know? Yeah, whatever ads they're running without my permission, that they're getting the money. You know what I mean? I don't think they do that, but yeah, I hope to God no one's running ads.
I guess we'll find out.
Good God!
If you're getting ads, let us know.
I think we've thoroughly exhausted the outline as well. Is there any way to tie our discussion together in a way we haven't already?
Things are bad. Some ways, you know, systemic and like real bad. Other ways, just pathetic and embarrassing. That's the way I would tie this together.
It's the most important election of our lifetimes, folks.
We haven't gotten there yet.
But when we get there, it'll be the most important election of our life.
Haley Stevens announced that is going to announce that she's running, I think, next week.
Man, if it's her against Pete Buttigieg for the Michigan Senate, I can't believe two CIA assets have ever.
Oh, Slotkin and Buttigieg. Yeah, that might be the. That Slotkin, might be what we end up getting. Yeah.
Yeah, because I think Slotkin was running, right? Yeah.
I don't think he's announced yet. They're all playing, like, you know, bashful about it. That they might not do it. I don't know.
Yeah, Slotkin is the CIA asset, not Stevens. Stevens only took Mike Bloomberg's money.
No, which might be worse.
Yeah, yeah. I just wanted to make sure I get my reasons I'm mad at people straight, you know?
Yeah, you got to be informed about... You have to have informed hatred.
Right, you know?
Well, on that note, I hope we've informed our listeners of who they should hate and why.
And if you want to continue to find out who to hate and why, keep listening to Greenhouse Gaslighting. Thanks again for coming on, Josh. Where can people find more of you if they want to hear more?
So I am on Twitter at JoshuaCost17. I also am on another show where I wear my wrestling hat for... I don't literally wear the hats. We do stream live, but the Monster Pop podcast, we are also on Twitter under that name, and we are also on Twitch and wherever you can listen to podcasts.
We'll have those links in the show notes and description. Thanks again for tuning in, dear listeners. We'll see you next time around. Take care. Wait, I forgot to do my own plug. God damn it.
Quickly say it and just edit it in.
Yeah, okay. Let me just quickly say it. You can find our social media links in the description as well below. Take care, folks.